Hey, good morning, everyone. What a lovely crowd. I hope we all get into some nice dialogue. I'm going to ooch up to the 20-minute mark, but I'll try to go as quick as I can. And mostly what I was charged to do today is give some background on the original CDC Kaiser Permanente ACEs study, just for those of you who might not be as familiar with it, but to speak a little bit to its methods. And can you just raise your hand if you are familiar with the study? Okay, so there's a lot to say about it, but mostly it's been very informative in the thinking about developing then data that can start to speak to this issue among children. And so I'm going to then present to you some information about what we're beginning to know about children. Let me just see, which button is it? Neither of them are working.
Okay, so let's try this.
Oh, that one. Okay. So I'm going to review some of the beginning data from the 2011-12 National Survey of Children's Health. And then finally, to the extent that we have time, give a quick glance at some of the efforts that are going on to apply and see how we can advance and promote child well-being by also addressing ACEs. So let me get going. I have no complex to report, but I do have perspectives that have emerged. And mostly what I'll just say is that I'm very optimistic and very excited about the time we live in and the innovations that we get to make in the coming years with focus in this area. So as I go through the presentation, I just challenge you to reflect on some of these questions. What should be the goals of the MCH community related to ACEs and resilience and positive health development? What research questions? Is now a good time? What will it take? What do MCH and policymakers need to know and need to know over and over? And what are the most significant barriers? And if there was one thing you could really do to change the landscape from your point of view, what would it be? So just be kind of in the back of your mind thinking about that, and that might help us as we go on in the discussion. So let me do a quick overview of the Adverse Childhood Experiences study launched by CDC and Kaiser Permanente. This was on adults, and it began in 1996. You can find a lot of information at acestudy.org. Some people think of this as the largest public health study you never heard of, although that's changing, but it's really only changing recently. It's been around a long time, almost 20 years. And the content and the stories that are told by the data and others have made it hard to even integrate this information into the Kaiser system itself. So there's reasons for that that we need to learn from. The study was done in two ways. The first was of around 13,454 people and a 71% response rate. And they collected information about adverse childhood experiences, protective factors, and family resilience aspects, and a lot of data on their medical history and charts. And then they did another wave a time later. And then looked at present health status and medical records, and then made a lot of associations through that pathway, and there are hundreds of articles that exist based on this study. I should say that it was largely a middle-class sample, and the average age was 55, and it was really a different kind of population than we are maybe focused on, and there are important implications for how we look at the data, especially by income and other population groups. These are the categories of adverse childhood experiences that were used in that study. Abuse, neglect, and household dysfunction, and you can read the list. And on the right are the proportions of the people in the study who responded affirmatively that that had been an experience that they had. And these are categories. These aren't events. These are not actual reported experiences. They're not measured about by when they happened, how often they happened, what the person's perceived sense of how it impacted them was. And there has been a tendency to score the data by just counting up the types. And it sounds crazy. We're in the middle, also with Paula Braidman and a few others, of torturing the ACEs scale that's in the National Survey of Children's Health around, is it a scale? Is it a linear scale, or is it a categorical scale, or what is it? And it does look like it's a scale. It does. And that's really interesting, that without knowing necessarily what we might think of as a more difficult type of stress. But if you think about the neurobiology of stress, stress is stress. And it can happen for any number of reasons based on what stresses you, what you find stressful, and what your stress response is. And so really the studies are beginning to show that it's our response and what we do with our experience that has the biggest impact on how it affects us biologically. And there's a lot of studies around sexual abuse in particular that we can refer to and discuss if you like. But that's maybe one of the reasons why it seems to work. But there's a lot more to say about that. But this is how it's done. And so in the national original survey, about 40% had two or more adverse childhood experiences of adults. And there was an 87% chance that if you had one, you had at least one other. That's true for the child data as well. If you have one, you have another. So it's very hard to analyze these individually, right? Because they're so over and co-occurring. So then there was the Behavior Risk Factor Surveillance Survey, which many of you I'm sure know about. Many states have included an ACEs module in their data collection. And so there's a similar pattern in those states where about 40% two or more as well. So it's strikingly similar in study after study. So there's a lot of multiple outcomes that are shown in the vast literature that was done from the original ACEs study. And one of the major pathways through which the effect is hypothesized is through risk factors and common diseases is health behaviors, things that we actually have some control over, and that also, in turn, the behaviors are very much influenced by the emotional state of a person and their own stress reactivity. So, you know, to change your health behaviors or beginning health behaviors that aren't good for you often is a stress regulation activity. So drinking or smoking would be soothing to the nervous system, actually, in the short term, and eating as well. So a lot of the health behaviors are very linked to the way that we manage stress, and we don't necessarily learn other ways to manage it early enough in life, and they become habits and they become patterns. And so there's a lot of lines that are drawn between ACEs and adult health through this pathway of health behaviors. And yesterday, I think it was 2 days ago, in the New York Times, David Brooks succinctly summarized the adult outcomes associated with higher ACEs score. So I'm just going to read it. The link between childhood trauma and adult health outcomes was striking. People with an ACE score of 4 were 7 times more likely to be alcoholics as adults than people with an ACE score of 0. They were 6 times more likely to have had sex before age 15, twice as likely to be diagnosed with cancer, 4 times as likely to suffer emphysema. People with an ACE score of 6 or above were 30 times more likely to have attempted suicide. And in epidemiology, one of the ways we calculate the effect of something is through something called attributable fraction, which is looking at the risk for the group exposed of an outcome that you are interested in minus the risk of those who were not exposed divided by the risk of those who were exposed. And so when we look at that, there's an attributable risk diagram that's quite nice that was formulated by the Harvard Center on the Developing Child, relating all the ACEs outcomes to a variety of health outcomes for adults. And you can see here that it ranges. And actually, this is one picture of this. I've seen others on other populations where those attributable factors are far out on the edge, approaching 60%, 70%. So it does matter what the population is. And when we look at maternal and child health high-risk populations and children in poverty and with other vulnerabilities, these attributable risk factors grow large. And that's part of the work we're doing looking at the National Survey of Children's Health. And we won't have time to go through all that, but just so you know, this is a story that can be told also for children and youth, at least with the data we have to some extent. So again, these are the impact pathways between adverse childhood experiences, disrupted neurodevelopment, social, emotional, and cognitive impairment, adoption of health risk behaviors. This is very linear. It's not linear, but this is sort of the line of reasoning. And there's a lot of summaries from the study that I'm not going to go over all of them, but basically it's very common, unrecognized. The link is powerful and proportionate. ACEs are the nation's most basic public health problems. This is really in the words of Dr. Robin Anda and Vincent Valletti, not my words. We often mistake intermediary mechanisms for basic cause, like obesity is the reason you have heart disease. Without going deeper into the underbelly of what is prior to the behaviors that lead to obesity, we really miss the point. And I think that's really what the challenge is in our society today, is to not keep missing that point and go into that murky space of what is prior to the health behavior. What we can do, according to the PIs, is routinely seek a history of adverse childhood experiences from all patients by questionnaire. I would also add that we want to collect information, perhaps more importantly, on strengths and resilience and positive factors. Acknowledge their reality by a lot of people not realizing how has this affected you later in life, that they are impacted by their childhood, that knowing that can get us off our own backs to some extent around the behaviors and ways we've become to manage stress or been influenced, and start to take seriously that something happened to me, I'm not bad. And that's actually a really, really core issue when we look at health behaviors and failures and positive health behaviors, is an issue of self-worth. There's actually a neuroscience article on that Bruce McEwen put forward, who did a lot of basic neuroscience work in this field, looking at self-worth and self-esteem as a very core differentiating factor for why certain people with certain similar exposures do or don't end up with some of the brain impacts that we see, which I was like, amazed that it's a 16-page, very dense article, if you like it. So let me now turn my attention to some data from the National Survey of Children's Health. And I just want to say at the outset that there are many, many people to be acknowledged in the fact that we even have this data. Just imagine it's 2004 or 5 in this country, and the Maternal and Child Health Bureau and Peter Van Dyke and many other people, Michael Kogan, who's here in the audience, know this is important, and yet it's a back and forth to get the data into a national survey. So we're talking about this today in 2015 because of work that started at least 10 years ago. And so I just want to really acknowledge that we have to always be thinking ahead. What do we need to know in 10 years? 10 years goes by like that. We need the kinds of information now so we can even be able to say this. So I just want to really acknowledge that, and that includes Paula Braveman and Neil Halfon and Paul Nowacek and many other people who were part of this. So the data, if you're not familiar with it, at childhealthdata.org, you can go and learn everything you possibly would ever want to know about the National Survey of Children's Health. I'm not going to go through all of it, but it's a large national survey, upwards of 100,000 children nationally weighted to represent the population in each state, and the key measures that we're going to focus on you'll see in a minute. So what do we know? About 48% of U.S. children have been exposed to one or more ACEs, and this is not the same as the CDC ACEs scale. This includes other things that are important for children. It may have included many other things, but it includes death of a parent, incarceration of a parent. It includes having extreme poverty, economic hardship. It's different from poverty. Many people in poverty do not answer that question positively, and many people who have 400% or more do answer it positively. So this is really the experience of economic hardship, and also racial discrimination. So there are other things too, and there's a whole document that we can share with you about what's in this. And about 3% with two or more, and a lot of variation across states, 16.3 to 33% in Oklahoma, and this is using a standardized method of data collection. So we can compare it, even if people don't agree that it's a perfect measure, because no measure is, we can compare and learn a tremendous amount from the data. So this is a little bit more on how it falls out for each item. And we're in the midst of finishing a psychometric analysis of the item as a scale and how different items predict different things, and can share more about that, but not right now. So there's a lot of variation, and which state is lowest and highest varies depending on the item as well. Of course, the prevalence, as you probably would predict, is higher among lower income groups, and of course by older age children, because of their fact that they live longer and have more opportunities for exposure. The effects do still look like they're most powerful in 0 to 5. So when you look at the impact, the relative impact of having ACEs on things like emotional behavioral problems, engagement in school, the younger, the bigger the impact. It is looking like this early childhood focus and the possible impact when you have exposures earlier in life really does show in the data, but this is cross-sectional. So even though it's an enormously high rate among children in poverty, the relative effects once you have ACEs tend to be fairly similar across income groups, and that's also a new finding. And I'll share what I can with you on that. I have more slides than I can share, but that's an important point to make, that if there's a lower proportion in those income groups that have ACEs, but once they have them, the impact in a variety of ways is very similar. Prevalence of mental health, chronic conditions, school engagement, and other factors. So that was a surprise, and there's a lot of detail more we can share. Certainly, just off the top, the prevalence of ACEs among children with special health care needs is dramatically higher. So we're seeing already potential early effects, and this is from a paper published in the MCH Journal, if you all are interested. The impact on chronic condition appears early in life, as I mentioned, with 32% in particular with two or more ACEs having special health care needs and 14.6 not. This is from a paper in Health Affairs. I mentioned the effects are consistent across income groups. Here's just one illustration, which is for 0 to 99%, those with four or more ACEs, 42% qualify on having an emotional, mental, or behavioral issue. It's 37.2 for 400% and above, and this is repeated across individual types of conditions. Importantly, the prevalence of emotional, mental, behavioral conditions really is impacted by resilience. Resilience is measured in the survey or used in the study in a very simple way. Resilience is a very large concept. One of the core concepts is being able to stay calm and in control when faced with a challenge. So neither collapsing nor acting out in an aggressive way. And that's a really, you know, important feature. So that's one aspect of resilience. When that one aspect of resilience is on board for a child, which can be learned and taught, it may be harder to teach with some than others, and we have to wrap around a lot of supports. But when it's on board, the prevalence of emotional, mental, behavioral issues is dramatically lower, with consistent effects across income groups. This is important for us to consider because this is where we can begin. I just keep wondering, well, with assess ACEs, sure, but let's just promote resilience, you know, as a cross-cutting public health issue, because many of us, ACEs or not, have issues with this. It does look in the data that resilience trumps ACEs, and even among those without ACEs, if they don't have resilience, their probability of having these other health problems is much higher. So this is just the distribution of children by their resilience and ACEs status crossed. And compellingly, 16.7% of children 0 to 99% of poverty are both resilient and ACEs-free, and that's 51% for 400% and above. So this is what I was talking about before. Again, it's the distribution. Once you do have ACEs in that higher income group, you've got a lot of issues, you need things, but it really speaks to the need to continue to focus on poverty. So if you have protective factors in the home, then there's also a big bump. So what we're seeing is that among children, we just take a group with emotional, mental, and behavioral problems, which is a very large group of people in America, children in America, who already have two or more adverse childhood experiences. So we've normalized the risk to they have emotional, mental, behavioral diagnosis, and they have two or more ACEs. If they have these protective factors, what is the prevalence of resilience? Which then goes on to predict school engagement given ACEs, and health conditions given ACEs. So resilience is important, just even this little way we measure it. So when you look here, you can see that having an adult mentor or having a parent who reports being able to share ideas about things that matter with their child, parents that report being usually or always aggravated with their child, which is hard to say yes to, but when people say yes to it, you know they really mean it on a national survey that was done over the phone. Parent knows most or all the child's friends and participates in their activities. These are sort of observable things, you know, about how parents are with their children. Whether they have ACEs or not, these things are potentially possible, and I think that's important to promote as well as the family factors and the well-being of the parent and the family, because the effects are very dramatic just in this basic cross-sectional study. In particular, when we look at sharing ideas, we get 21% being resilient if they already have EMB and ACEs, emotional, mental, behavioral problems, versus 40% 2.6%. That's that second bar. And again, the attributable factor, calculated one attributable factor just for you all, is 57% for 0 to 99% of poverty and 43% for 400% and above, which to me says that it may be that these protective factors are even more important for poorer children and that we really want to focus on supporting the family wherever possible. So there's many other things to say, but I would say assess resilience and protective factors and develop widespread capacity to teach self-regulation and healing from trauma are the two takeaways. There's a lot we have to go on with our current MCH systems of care using the CSHDN model. This model still holds up in terms of the components of it, but it's what's embedded in it and the way that it's implemented. I don't think we need a new model. This was brilliant, and it works. And I think that the maternal and child health community can really charge forward on a lot of solid ground. We know now that even with the way we measure a system of care, that we're not doing well. Only about 1 in 5 children meet these criteria. It could be that it's not the system. We need the system, but it's what's in it. And so I wonder about the content of how we're doing what we do, and making sure the structures are there, but that still comes down to us and people and how we are in the context of those home visits and in those different environments that we meet children. There's a lot of trauma-informed care going on. We'd like to promote a resilience-informed care model. And there's a national project that we're doing with Academy Health with some Robert Wood Johnson funding to take this dialogue further into a research agenda and a few commissioned papers, hopefully getting more out of the literature or out of the data that we spoke about today and other. And I invite you to learn more about that if you want to participate and add your voice. We've got about 500 people who've participated in sharing their ideas and welcome you as well. So I'm going to wrap up with this, which is to say, I first of all think we should leverage what we have. The system of care model, life course theory and principles that were set forth by Amy Fine and Milt Kotelchek and the Bureau all still work, are all still where we need to head. Health is an emergent property, meaning we have possibility. That's the key, I think, is to prioritize possibility. There's no silver bullet. We need an era of experimentation like Clyde Hertzman talks about. We need to stay the course on poverty and promote a primary care public health, positive health model at all levels. So that's where I'm going to leave it, and there's more to share, and we can give you the more detailed slides as we go forward.